They have a gavel.
They can't be late because of committee meetings.
We're getting stopped in the hallway because there's nobody out there.
I will call the House Committee on Health Care to order for Friday. What's the date today?
May 6th.
May 6th. And it turns out we are the only action going on in the building today. At this time. So, in fact, the only committee that met any time today. So I apologize for not making this a more commodious time. You will have, as we take testimony, I have put out the A14 amendments, and the A14 amendments represent much less than meets the eye. But it would be useful if you have them and if you want to testify along the line to those amendments as well, which will be on the before the committee next week. It would be useful to put those things together. The A14 amendments delete from page 9, and that's in section 10, one whole sentence. The sentence is, the corporation may limit the number of qualified health plans that may be offered through the exchange as long as the limit applies equally to all insurers. Section 11.
Yes.
That's section 11. Let me comment on that first. The dash sixes in the Senate deleted the second part of that sentence, which is intended to not proscribe in advance that the business plan that's going to be coming before the legislature in 2010 cannot negotiate for price. But it left a sentence that then looked like the exchange could limit the number of health plans. The intention of this amendment is to take that out so the business plan that's coming back to the legislature can decide what is going to happen. So it's essentially to keep it open. What looks like an amendment to Section 12 isn't, the adding about 50 to 100 employees or that kind of stuff is in the bill. It's just the whole section is repeated because that same sentence is added to Section 12. And in order to take it out of Section 12, which comes into force after a time, they needed to have the whole section, but it doesn't show. It was in subpart 4, that same sentence is removed. So the function of A14 is simply to remove that one sentence and leave it open for the exchange to create a business plan that that they decide they want to present to the legislature for action in the 2012 short session. We have a lot of testifiers today. I'm going to ask you to hold your testimony to 3 minutes, please. And the faster we get through it, I suspect this is going to look like Haydn's 102nd Symphony when we're done with only a violin playing and the rest of the orchestra have gone home. But we'll stay at least until the violin solo at the end.
Thank you.
Let's start with Vern Sabo and Jamie Sewell and Jim Hauser for the first panel. Oh, I'm sorry. Open up public hearing on Senate Bill 99. The second panel will be Jan Meekum. I'm having trouble seeing this. Steve Ferry, is that right? NFIB and Betsy Earls will be the second panel. Go for it, guys.
Co-Chair Greenlink, members of the committee, for the record, Dr. Vern Sabo representing the Oregon Chiropractic Association and the American Chiropractic Association. Now, I'm here to speak to the Dash 13 amendments. Is that appropriate?
You only there are no 14. Dash 15 amendments before us.
13.
There are no Dash 13 before us.
Okay. What I'd like to speak to is the federal statute that it would apply to insurance here in Oregon. The point I want to make is that there was a coalition of health care providers on the federal level that were able to push through and gain a non-discrimination provision in the Federal Accountable Care Act. That coalition of providers included the American Academy of Audiology, American Academy of Nurse Practitioners, the American Association of Nurse Anesthetists, the American Chiropractic Association, the American College of Nurse Midwives, the American Occupational Therapy Association, the American Optometric Association, the American Physical Therapy Association, the Podiatric Medical Association, the American Psychological Association, the American Speech Language Hearing Association, and finally the National Association of Social Workers. The provision in federal statute, which is non-discrimination, is not an any willing provider provision. What it simply states is that any health care provider working in their scope, licensure, or certification cannot be discriminated against. In other words, the plans must have some chiropractic, naturopathic physicians or acupuncturists on their panel and other health care providers. I have an LC opinion that I've given to you as well that validates that Oregon statute can't conflict with that federal statutory language. And so the reason why I want to bring this forward is simply if we're going to get true health care reform, and I sat on the governor's health systems transformation team, part and parcel to that's got to be some movement away from the medical model and over-reliance on drugs and pharmacology and surgery. Currently in this country, we're approaching the 4 billion prescription per year mark. That's B for billion. By 2015, the prescription direct cost of prescription drugs is projected to reach 500 billion. Currently, individuals 65 and older, 83% take one prescription drug each day. 75% take four prescription drugs. 11% take five prescription drugs. Right at 2 million teens and children are being prescribed two or more psychiatric drugs in combination. There are no safety studies that validate that is even safe. In excess of 300,000 children each year are prescribed the same psychiatric drugs in combination. In Oregon, we lead the nation in narcotic use for chronic pain and for spinal surgery. So if we're going to get true health care reform, our point is we need to have full integration of complementary and alternative health care providers. I provided a 7-year study that shows the outcomes, which are substantial as far as cost savings, improved patient satisfaction, and improved safety. Quite frankly, if there's any provider types that can get us to what the governor refers to and Dr. Berwick back in Washington, D.C., the triple aim, mumbo-jumbo, it's complementary to health care providers.
Chair, will you wrap it up, please?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, that completes my testimony.
Thank you. I'm not going to ask after each witness or even after each panel if you have any questions. If you have questions along the way, just interrupt at that time. That'd be great.
Yeah. We did request another opinion on that to clarify that. I don't have anything back yet in our office, but it did go down to LC with, I think, pretty much what we have here, but just to make sure that if that amendment is not needed, so I'll let you know when we get that back. But,
yes, please.
Co-Chair Greenlick and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jamie Small. I'm here representing the CHP Group. We're a complementary alternative medicine preferred provider organization. Our purpose is to provide access to Oregonians to high-quality CAM providers. We see the challenges in healthcare now as related to cost, access, and quality, and we see where CAM providers can help mitigate those challenges. They typically offer cost-effective and therapeutically effective services to Oregonians. Access to those providers improves overall access to healthcare, and they're committed to quality, as is our company. CAM providers are held to the same strict standards of quality as conventional medical providers, including advanced education, licensure, credentialing, and the delivery of evidence-based care and accountability for outcomes. They're typically referred to as medical specialists. but particularly chiropractors and naturopathic physicians by their training and licensure are portal of entry providers and first contact providers. We feel that a healthcare delivery system should prioritize wellness and prevention. We see CAM as a vital piece of any health plan offering adequate healthcare services. The premise of complementary alternative medicine is treating the patient as a whole person, and we think it aligns perfectly with the management of chronic conditions, and when it's integrated with conventional medicine, often produces results superior to conventional medicine alone. Complementary alternative medicine approaches to care are highly individualized. They have an emphasis on maximizing the body's innate healing ability. They involve the patient as active participants in their own care. And CAM addresses not only the physical aspects of ill health, but also the mental, spiritual dimensions of disease, and most significantly place a strong emphasis on preventative medicine. That concludes my remarks.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, sir.
Thank you for your testimony. I'm a strong supporter of complementary care. We're looking at Senate Bill 99. I have to admit to being completely befuddled about your testimony. Do you have a position on Senate Bill 99? Are you asking for an amendment? Is there something wrong with the bill? What are you here to tell us?
Well, we're asking for our amendment is the Dash 13s, which aren't being considered, which insert the language from federal statute. We'd like it to be explicit in Oregon statute so stakeholders don't end up in a courtroom down the line.
Okay. Thank you. That's helpful. That I didn't hear that on the record. The LC opinion, as I read it, we don't have to go down this rabbit hole now. We can take it offline. But the LC opinion, as I read it, states very clearly that federal law trumps state law, and therefore the protections that you're looking for in federal law will apply in the state. If there's some dispute over that, that'd be interesting to discuss at a further time. Thanks for being here.
Yep. Co-Chair Greenlick, members of the committee, my name is Jim Hauser, and I'm co-owner of Hawthorne Auto Clinic in Portland, Oregon. When my wife, Liz Daly, and I opened Hawthorne Auto Clinic 28 years ago, we made the commitment to offer those who worked with us a good benefits package, including comprehensive health insurance. Currently, my company pays over $100,000 a year in health care premiums for our 9 full-time employees and their families. Unless we can get control of rising premium costs, we will have to reduce or eliminate coverage, which will harm our ability to compete with larger companies for the best employees. We're not the only small business owners that are facing these problems. In fact, small businesses healthcare costs have grown 129% since 2000. Workers are paying an average of 18% more in small businesses than for their premiums than those with larger firms. Administrative costs are eating up two and a half times more of their premiums than larger businesses pay, and less than half of America's smallest firms can afford to offer healthcare benefits at all. Proponents of Senate Bill 99 in its current form, argue that increased participation by insurance companies in the exchange will spontaneously lead to greater competition and market control of insurance premium pricing. In fact, not only is there absolutely no evidence that insurance companies will begin to innovate and compete because of an exchange, but all the evidence is that they will not change their uncompetitive practices. Insurance companies do not need an exchange to decide to begin competing. There are numerous health insurance companies in the Portland metro area, and yet over the last 10 years, premium prices have only gone one way, up, 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 usually by double digits. A health insurance exchange, if done right, has a chance to be the best vehicle for both increasing access to health insurance coverage and, most importantly, controlling outrageous insurance premium increases. However, even though Senate Bill 99 in its current form has the potential to address the issue of increased access and choice for businesses in parts of the state that have experienced limited access to coverage, it does nothing to rein in out-of-control insurance premium increases. Our best hope for health insurance cost control is for the exchange to provide small business owners with the ability to negotiate with big insurance companies, leveraging the buying power of all the 350,000 enrollees to obtain a better deal, just like large businesses do now. Small businesses must also believe that the exchange is truly working for them, not against them. That means that the exchange board should be free of any actual or perceived conflicts of interest. Insurance company executives and lobbyists should not be put in the position of overseeing the very policies and decisions that will directly affect their industry's bottom line. Instead, the exchange board should create an advisory group made up of the numerous insurance interests, healthcare providers, pharmaceutical interests, etc., that can provide the necessary expertise without the inevitable conflict of interest and final voting ability that would accompany insurance industry participation in board functioning. Oregon's small business and individual health insurance purchasers desperately need a health insurance exchange that advocates for them by providing both increased access and selective contracting free of any conflict of interest. Without that protection, the exchange will not be able to gain consumer trust. The Oregon House now has the opportunity to make a small business and consumer-friendly health insurance exchange a reality. Thank you for the opportunity to provide testimony on this important issue.
Do you generally favor the bill? I didn't hear it.
it's coming a long way. It's coming. It's so close to being a really good bill.
Great.
Mr. Chair, I just want to thank Jim for taking time out of his busy schedule going to and from the White House to grace us with his presence. Glad you're here. Thanks for your testimony.
Thank you, Representative Cannon.
Thank you very much. Second panel, call. Now, Meekum, Steve Ferrar, or Ferry, I don't know what that last letter is, and Betsy Earls. I have one person, only one person who signed up in opposition. That's Onofre Contreras. Is the opposition correct?
I think it's the same response as his.
Okay, well, I'll call you next. And Steve Buckstein is the only one who's marked actually neutral. There are several who haven't marked anything, but Steve, why don't you come up with him after this panel?
I'll start, if that's okay. Mr. Chairs and Mr. Co-Chairs and members of the committee, for the record, I'm Betsy Earls, representing Associated Oregon Industries in support of Senate Bill 99A. AOI supports the approach that 99A takes to the development of a health insurance exchange, and we very much appreciate all the work that's been done on the bill so far. As written, the bill has the potential to move Oregon toward our stated goals for the health insurance system and the healthcare system, which address issues of cost, quality, and access. Senate Bill 99 contains several elements that are critical to the business community in the creation of an exchange. The bill provides opportunities to check in on progress as the exchange is developed. It requires that the exchange board obtain legislative approval before making certain decisions that are key to us, and those include imposing qualification requirements for health plans that would be stricter than federal requirements, any imposition of minimum benefit requirements that are above federal requirements, and any fee structure that's imposed on participating plans. The check back with the legislature on those particular items provides us with a level of comfort that there will be many groups of people overseeing the work that's being done on the development of the exchange. And we also appreciate the fact that the board will be working on a business plan over the next several months in order to present it to the 2012 legislature, which we think offers an important opportunity for review. Another thing that was very important to us was the dual track purchasing that you see in the bill right now. A dual market system, to the extent possible, we want people to buy insurance from the exchange because they see some benefit to it, not because they have to. And if consumers have a real choice between purchasing inside or outside the exchange, we feel that the exchange is more likely to remain innovative and competitive, and the bill allows for that right now. Another aspect that's important to our members is the ability to make a defined contribution to one organization, which is the exchange, which their employees can use to find the best insurance for their own particular situations. This enables employers to provide all or part of the health care coverage that their employees need, but eliminates the need for those employers to spend time trying to figure out which plan would suit the most of their employees in the best way possible. One other thing we wanted to see that was important to us is that individual purchasers have highly portable coverage. Senate Bill 99 provides a way for employees to aggregate the contributions of multiple employers with available subsidies in order to purchase the plan of their choice. The bill offers unprecedented portability of coverage and allows employees moving between jobs to maintain their health insurance plan, network, and doctor. We feel that this aspect alone will increase the chances for people to remain insured, regardless of employment status. Those are the main points that I wanted to talk to you about the bill that is before you today. I think I've talked to most of you about the bill more fully. Just to address your Dash 14 amendments, AOI is opposed to deleting the language that the Dash 14 amendments delete because we don't feel that it's in the best interest of Oregon's business community to allow any possibility for the exchange to do selective contracting. And we believe that deleting that last line of that sentence, which I don't have in front of me right now, would allow the possibility of that selective contracting to take place. So we would oppose those amendments.
We'd leave that discussion up to the business plan development. You're right.
Yeah, it would.
It wouldn't force it one way or the other.
I think I have the right sentence. Okay.
Great.
Good afternoon, Co-Chair Greenlick, Co-Chair Thompson, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jan Meekums, the State Director of National Federation of Independent Business, Oregon. NFIB, as I'm sure most of you know, represents small business in Oregon and also on the national level. And I'm not going to repeat a lot of what Betsy has communicated because we have been working hand in hand on this bill for many months now. And many of the features that are in the current bill were input by NFIB on behalf of small business and is represented in the bill. And we, too, support Senate Bill 99 as an opportunity to serve the small business individual market better. And that is the makeup of our membership. Most of our small business owners have less than 10, actually 3 to 5 employees. So the elements that are in SB 99 are very important to our members, and we feel that they are adequately represented as a starting point, and that the business plan will be further developed, and we will be able to again address the exchange and how best to make it tailor-made for Oregon. We all know that there's a timeline that has been put upon us by the federal government, and that it's very, very important to move forward with this piece of legislation and give us the opportunity to develop it during the interim. And another element that is in this plan that we support is the fact that agents and brokers are included in to participate in the exchange. Many of our small business owners are very busy running their businesses. They do not have the time to ferret through all of the complexities of healthcare insurance, and this allows them to maintain those relationships while taking advantage of the exchange and being able to participate in the exchange as well. So with that, I urge your support of SB 99, and I'll turn it over to Steve Faree, who is an NFIB member and a small business owner.
I think my friends here know that I was opposed to this current formulation of agents. I was willing to back off that if I get the A14, so amendments is a compromise. Steve?
Good afternoon, Chair Greenlick and Chair Thompson, the committee. Thank you for your time. My name is Steve Faree. I'm the owner of Mr. Ritter Plumbing in Portland, Oregon. We have 30 employees, and we currently provide health care to them. I want to start off saying that I know this health care is a tough issue. This is actually the first time I ever testified, and why I testified on this issue is beyond me, but here I am.
It'll be easier the next time.
You know, I believe the whole issue is really a series of compromises, and I think SB 99 is really no exception. We've had our rates go up 10 to 18%, anywhere from 10 to 18% a year. In fact, one year they went 35%, and, you know, we had to change carriers. So it's a tough issue for small business owners. As a business owner, you need to be able to plan ahead. And there's so much uncertainty with the Affordable Care Act and where that's going right now. It's really tough to be able to do that as a business owner, which also impacts your hiring and so on. I think that we can proactively, as a state, address this, you know, with the exchange, and really be proactive and out front there in front of with the rest of the community. Small business needs affordable, quality and accessible health care for both employers and employees. In my business, we actually, you know, utilize benefits to attract and retain good employees. You know, it's a real retaining tool for us. Both of these gals, both Jan and Betsy, both hit on the aspect of the dual market system. I truly believe we need a free market system when it comes to healthcare. If you look at a number of other industries like the optometry, cosmetic surgery, cosmetic dental, those kind of things, where they really truly have a free market system, the cost to the consumer has gone down in those industries. So, you know, I really believe that the free market system really needs to exist. The defined contributions is an excellent point in here, especially for folks that may be working for a couple of different companies, and they can combine those to get plans. I think is very helpful to the employees. I believe we need to have the exchange operate as part of the insurance marketplace, regulated by DCPS. It should not have any independent regulatory authority over the market. It should be part of the market and not a regulator. I think that's really key when it comes to this bill. As a business owner, I can also tell you that Oregon, we have lots of fees. And one of the issues I saw in here, too, that I really appreciated the fact that we do cap the fees in terms of the cost of the exchange. And lastly, the fact that we have carriers, agents, everybody involved at the table, I think is a positive thing. I'm a firm believer in synergy, you know, where people get together and really mastermind how we can move things forward if it's done in a very constructive way. And the fact that we can also utilize our existing agents. As business people, we're busy. You have certain agents you work with that take care of this stuff for you. And, you know, we want to be able to have to do that and not have another thing that we have to manage. Although this may not be a perfect bill, as I stated in the beginning, we will need a series of compromises. And I feel that SB 99 does just that. I support the bill. So thank you for your time.
Mr. Fair, can I ask you a question?
Yes.
On this business of agents, I actually have never objected to there being agents involved. What I've objected to is bearing agents' fees in the overall costs of the insurance rather than having it where individuals who want to use agents pay the agents directly. Would that cause you a problem if it worked out that agents could be involved in the plan, and they would have a fee schedule, and if you wanted to use an agent, you could pay for it, as opposed to bearing their costs in the overall.
No, you know, from a business standpoint, you know, I think any time the consumer or a business person can know what the costs are and be able to see things broken out, and you want to spend more money, you know what? I know I'm not the cheapest plumbing company in town, and I'm not trying to be. We provide an outstanding service. And just like you can buy a nice coat at Nordstrom's, or you can buy one at another store, right? I think what
you want to mention which one?
No, I
know he doesn't.
No.
He was ready to.
You were about to.
I'm trying to learn how to get into politics. No, right. You know, so I think having a real open market and also I think if we can get the consumers involved in the healthcare program, then that's how we drive costs down, too, because people need to know what they're spending and what value they're getting for the money they're putting out there. And I think that's an important issue. And I don't know if I've totally answered your question.
Yes, you have. Thank you. I appreciate that. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank
you. Can I have Mr. Contreras and Dr. Buckstein next, please? And after that, we'll have, where are we? Jeremy Rogers, Ryan Fisher, and John Mullen will be the next panel.
Excuse me. I'm trying to figure out how this works best. Co-Chair Green, Co-Chair Thompson, members of the committee, I see double at 2 feet and away and okay close. I'm trying to figure out my spot here. For the record, my name is Onofre Contreras, and for the record, that's spelled O-N-O-F-R-E, for those taking notes. I'm here representing the Oregon Health Action Campaign, a 25-year-old nonprofit dedicated to empowering the consumer voice in the development of quality, responsive health systems that allow all people to access the health care that they need, when they need it, from the providers of their choice at an affordable cost. With this focus on the voice of the consumer, we're concerned that the Exchange Corporation governance structure and operating procedures as drafted will not guarantee that the overarching value of the exchange marketplace will be to advocate for and protect the interests of the consumer. It is imperative that the governance of the exchange board be free of conflict of interest. It runs counter to the values of protecting consumers if this legislation institutionalizes conflicts of interest. In continuing to advance the protection of consumers, we also believe that the Oregon legislature should establish an exchange with the ability to negotiate on behalf of enrollees so that consumers are assured of benefiting from the best possible health insurance packages. Ultimately, we need to remember that in order to best serve the consumers and to ensure that public subsidy monies are used in the most effective and efficient manner within the exchange, there needs to be accountability to the public that the interests of the consumer are being met. We feel this can best be accomplished by having strong conflict of interest provisions for members of the Exchange Board and the ability to negotiate for the best health insurance options. In the end, we need to be able to be sure that people are receiving the best health care for their needs rather than simply ensuring they have insurance. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Dr. Buxton.
Co-Chair Greenlick, Co-Chair Thompson, members of the committee. Just for the record, I don't have a PhD.
You don't?
Just an MBA. So
you sound like a PhD. That's what confused me.
I will try not to.
Not very, perhaps.
My name is Steve Buckstein. I'm a founder and senior policy analyst at Cascade Policy Institute, public policy, nonprofit, nonpartisan research organization based in Portland. And I'm here today not to formally support or oppose SB 99, but to put on the record some concerns that I have if the exchange in this format goes forward. And the main concern is that I want to be assured or want to do anything possible to improve consumer choice, expand consumer choice with the exchange. And I'm afraid that, you know, there's a possibility that it could go the other way. As some of you probably know, and maybe it doesn't make a difference, the U.S. House earlier this week voted to basically withdraw the funding for these exchanges. That probably won't happen, but it gave the Obama administration an opportunity to restate, as I understand it, its position of what these exchanges should do. And the quote, just one sentence, was from the administration on Wednesday, I believe, Tuesday or Wednesday. Exchanges will allow Americans to compare prices and health insurance plans and decide which quality, affordable option is right for them. But in order to make such quality, affordable options, to make such decisions meaningful for Americans and, in this case, for Oregonians, I think that we need more plans, more options than the state of Oregon currently allows. I testified on this issue in March with House Bill 2977, which would have allowed Oregonians to purchase health insurance policies from companies offering them in other states, as long as they were licensed in other states. And I think that, as I understand it, SB 99 with the board as it's constituted will be able to make some decisions that would go beyond what the state of Oregon allows now in terms of the mandates. So I would encourage any way possible, as the work group goes forward or however you're going forward with this in February, to encourage the board to allow more options than are currently available, either
Oregon companies that could develop plans and offer plans in the exchange that didn't include all the mandates that Oregon imposes now, and or allow Oregonians to shop through the exchange for plans elsewhere that are approved in other states if those insurance companies want to sell to Oregonians. And as I testified last time, I think it was March 7th, DCBS had a policy analyst here who stated his concerns about regulatory, sort of the even playing field, that some of these insurance companies from out of state would have some advantage over Oregon companies. I think that can be dealt with, and it should be dealt with. They should be on an even playing field. But that being said, it's what, as a previous testifier talked about, it's competition, it's consumer choice that has the best opportunity, I think, to make plans more affordable. So I think whatever decisions are made on the national level, and as I understand it, there'll be what's called an essential health benefits package defined, Oregon can take the lead. We're one of the first states to look at an exchange like this. Oregon can take the lead by allowing our citizens more choice than is allowed now in the state. This will allow exchanges to satisfy the needs of consumers who want more affordable insurance choices, very high deductible, for example, what are called catastrophic plans, and if they have needs that don't fall under those benefits, then they would have to pay for them themselves, as we talked about before. But it would allow people to choose more affordable policies or to choose more comprehensive policies if they want to. If the exchange doesn't offer such choices, I think it runs the risk of quickly becoming part of the problem, which is, as we understand it, the problem is driving costs up and pushing more people out of the insurance marketplace. So in conclusion, I hope the exchange that you envision and that you set in process, if you do, is charged with helping to open up the insurance marketplace to more affordable plans, thus being part of the solution instead of part of the problem. Thank you.
Yeah, and those decisions are, I mean, we're trying to leave those, including my amendment, those decisions as open as possible for the formulation of the board to present a business plan to the legislature in February. They are talking, I mean, it does talk about, as on the national thing, the bronze, silver, and gold model, and the assumption that the bronze would be relatively less expensive than...
If I could just respond real quickly, Co-Chair Greenlick. The assumption is the bronze would be less expensive. The problem is bronze, I think, through politics, can quickly turn into gold, as what's happened in Oregon with the mandates. I hope that bronze stays bronze, is what I'm... And I think you can give some direction so that if the board of this exchange comes back with a Cadillac-only or a gold-only option, you can say no.
Well, that's very much there. Representative Parrish?
Thank you. I've got a question. You mentioned a concern about that the board itself, the oversight board, should be made up of just consumers and you know, small business owners or whoever, and not have insurance. Can you, or agents or anybody from the industry, be on that board? Can you kind of share with me the rationale behind why you've got that concern?
Yeah, Co-Chair Thompson, Representative Parrish. It's not that we're calling for folks who don't have those connections. It's only that there not be conflict of interest. You can have not have a conflict of interest and have worked in an insurance industry for 30 years and be retired, as we've seen, and be on a committee. It's you know, at the time that you are serving on that commission, not calling for 100% consumer, but those that are there have a voice that is independent. One of the concerns is that, you know, there will be a bill that passes. There will be an exchange. The issue will be how difficult will it be in whatever system emerges for the consumers to be really represented and to have their interest, you know, at the forefront. It can be made as difficult or as easy as possible, depending on the leadership that emerges from the board. And that's one reason we're hoping that there's that lack of a conflict of interest.
The current version calls for no more than two of the nine members
right.
coming from anywhere in the health industry.
Yes.
I guess my concern in that is we actually have other boards and other policy parts of our government where I would have that same response and gut intuition that you've just expressed, and yet those boards are made up entirely of people in the industry while there's potentially some of them while they're still in the industry, and there's none of that other sideboard representation that what you're talking about exists. So it's not unusual that to see entire agencies filled up with folks in their industry, and that consumer voice and other things seems to be missing. So I'll be curious to see how this comes forward to fruition when we don't make that same conscious choice in other agencies and commissions and things that this government is currently working with. So thank you.
This committee fought very hard over the last two sessions to try and expand the public representation on health licensing boards, where that was exactly a problem. It's still pretty heavily dominated by the profession itself. And I think we need to keep pushing on that, because I think that's the issue you raise is exactly right.
Well, I've said on other policy committees, too, that aren't dealing with health care, but where, you know, they're dominated entirely by the industry and there is no public input. So I'm just kind of curious to see how this conversation will turn out.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We have now Jeremy Rogers, Ryan Fisher, and John Mullen. After that, we'll have... Darlene Huntress, is that right? Christine Shinryan. And
you can call Tom if you want. He's here now.
And Tom Holt.
Co-Chair Greenlick, Co-Chair Thompson, thank you. Members of the committee, my name is Jeremy Rogers with the Oregon Business Council. Copies of my written testimony coming up here, so I'll just hit on a few points, many of them which have already been made. But the Oregon Business Council is a statewide business association. We mobilize Oregon executives to improve Oregon's economy and quality of life through research, analysis, and engagement in public policy. We've been working on healthcare issues since about 2004 with the concern that the rising costs of healthcare have the potential to cripple Oregon and the nation's economy. We support actions to give all Oregonians access to quality, affordable healthcare, and we believe that this can best be accomplished in a system where individuals, employers, health plans, and providers have incentives to encourage good health, where consumers make informed choices about health practices and treatment options based on understandable health information, transparent information on prices, and on quality. And we believe that a properly structured health exchange can help achieve these goals, and that Senate Bill 99A is structured such that it can achieve those goals. And a few of the principles that we've long supported in an exchange, which we believe are reflected in Senate Bill 99A, that we believe that the health insurance market must be a stable and fair marketplace, you know, a level playing field that creates the proper financial incentives for providers and for health plans to compete on cost and on quality. We believe the exchange should create a health insurance marketplace that provides clear information to consumers about the choices that are available to them, including comparative data on healthcare cost and quality. Consumers want to be informed purchasers of health insurance and healthcare, but in our current system, they lack the information they need to make intelligent choices. In today's market, consumers are generally shielded from the real cost of healthcare and thus have no incentive to make cost-conscious choices. Providing information about cost implications of various choices will not only help them make cost-conscious decisions, but will help cause them to demand higher quality medical care at a more affordable cost. Employers need the option to offer a defined contribution, which employees can use to purchase their choice of health plans either through their employer or on the exchange. Believe that the opportunity to contribute a fixed amount towards premiums would encourage employees to shop for the best value and encourage cost competition among health plans while allowing employers more certainty in their employee benefit costs. The exchange should also allow individuals to aggregate contributions of multiple employers with subsidies to purchase the plan of their choice. And we believe that careful and thoughtful consideration should be given to policy and regulatory restrictions in order to avoid major disruptions in the market. Changes should include phased approaches for implementation, and the exchange should follow the timelines established by the federal government as a new business venture to help create value over time. The exchange should not worsen the cost shift that already occurs in the system, but rather seek to minimize it. And again, we think that the Senate Bill 99A, as structured, is in line with these principles. We think Oregon has an opportunity to develop a well-functioning exchange that offers a value proposition that's compelling for consumers and employers, so compelling that it attracts and retains them over time. And we appreciate your hard work on this and the entire legislature's work on it, and would just like to, again, offer our support for the bill.
Jeremy, thank you. If I remember correctly, the creation of Exchange was the number one health component of your Oregon business plan for 2011.
It was a key component, and we've been advocating for this, I think it was since 2007 or 8, well before the federal government even started looking at this. So, yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you, Co-Chair Greenlink. Co-Chair Thompson, my name is Ryan Fisher. I'm here to testify on behalf of the Oregon Association of Naturopathic Physicians on in favor of the Dash 13 amendment, and I will be very brief today. As stated before me, the intent of the Dash 13s is to insert federal non-discrimination language into Senate Bill 99. There are over 600 naturopathic physicians who stand ready and licensed to help bend the cost curves in Oregon. These physicians are trained and licensed to diagnose and treat disease. With workforce shortages, particularly in primary care, being one of the barriers that we face, we believe that the language in the Dash 13s can help to improve access to primary care, which is an important first step toward improving the public outcomes and health outcomes in our state. With that, I'll conclude my testimony and also encourage you to pay extra close attention to the colleague to my left.
You got an endorsement, John.
Thank you. That's quite good. Mr. Co-Chair, members of the committee, for the record, John Mullen, and I'm here in two capacities, one from the leadership team of the Human Services Coalition of Oregon and for the Oregon Law Center, but I will still get in my remarks under 3 minutes for both. There are a number of our members today, Human Services Coalition, that are in the audience, and because we have a wide variety of organizations and individuals that are involved, we decided to approach the exchange discussion from a matter of producing some principles. The principles that we work from are pretty easy and fairly apparent to us that make sense to bring in the most support from our members. The first is that we support the triple aim. We see this as really an important way of stating how we're trying to transform healthcare in the state of Oregon. Secondly, we recognize the exchange is an important consumer and business tool. We want the exchange to be a standalone public corporation, which is the way it is in the bill, and that it have an effect on the triple aim. The third principle has to do with the populations that we serve, the Medicaid populations, vulnerable Oregonians. We're concerned about the churn in the system. There will be people that will be moving on and off of Medicaid, and we want to make sure that we have the best services available for people and also affordability. And with that, I'll just segue very quickly into the Oregon Law Center approach. We did not take a position on Senate Bill 99. Some of our colleagues and friends wound up opposing it. However, we did sign on to the SAFE campaign letter, which you'll hear later about the SAFE campaign approach, which basically had two major issues of concern. One was conflict of interest on the board, and second was the ability to negotiate. So while we did not sign on in opposition, we still continue to have some issues about Medicaid. I want to put a little bit of a quick finer point on the Medicaid issues. Not only is there the churn in the system, but the affordability of the plans once somebody is coming off Medicaid. When the rollout of federal health insurance, federal health reform happens, we'll have up to 138% of federal poverty level, and then there'll be the cost sharing up to 400% of federal poverty level. So somebody coming off Medicaid is going to need to have an affordable plan, and we're concerned about making sure that's the case. And finally, I would mention that there's confusion in my mind in the bill about the eligibility process, and maybe this will be part of the business plan that will come back. In other words, we will now have a system that deals with Medicaid, healthy kids, the federal health reform populations, and it seems like it's going to be important to have a seamless eligibility process that works for everybody. So we look forward to having further discussion on that particular issue, and with that, I would conclude my remarks.
Right on the button. I didn't think you were going to get it all in. Thank you very much. Okay, the next panel, Arlene Huntress, Christine Chin Ryan, and Tom Holt. Huntress is a great name.
Thank you. It's a cool name. I had nothing to do with it. Thank you, Dad. My name is Darlene Huntress, co-chair Greenlick, co-chair Thompson, and members of the committee. I appreciate you giving me a few minutes to chat. I make it a habit to always follow John Mullen so that I can just say ditto and leave. I've submitted written testimony on behalf of Oregon Action, and I'm not going to read that to you because I know we have lots of folks that need to talk and would like to talk about this. But we are part of the SAFE Coalition as well that John just made reference to and that you will hear about today as well. And we, too, share some concerns on SB 99, the current version. And that is that at this point, the bill, we believe, is flawed because it doesn't allow for cost negotiation. When we talk to our members who are primarily low and moderate income Oregonians, when you ask them their biggest concern about health care, they don't normally talk about, well, we don't have enough options. What they talk about is we can't afford it. What they talk about is that out-of-pocket costs are skyrocketing, our premiums are going up 20% every year, and for most Oregonians, that's the biggest concern. And so we're very worried that that piece will be taken away from the business plan as it is, and we very much believe that an exchange that doesn't allow for cost negotiation is not going to solve any problems, because at the end of the day, you're still going to have Oregonians that cannot afford health insurance. So we encourage you all to really look at that and get it back in the bill. And then the second piece is the conflict of interest piece as well. I won't get too far into that except to say this. If folks on the board are performing as sort of smart purchasers for consumers and for small business owners, it doesn't make a lot of sense to us that folks who are sitting on that board who may be trying to get contracts to get into the exchange, we're not sure that a seller should actually be on a purchasing board. So that's part of our concern there. Because we feel like they'd be approving contracts for themselves. So that's kind of where we see it. We have some concerns about that. I think it's a little bit different than some of the boards that you might refer to, that you were talking about, Representative Parrish. But that's kind of where, that's kind of our concern. So with that, I will pass it off.
And how would you feel about 1 out of 2?
1 out of 2. Well, we'll talk. We can talk about that. You know? I would have to visit with my colleagues and decide. But
Thank you. Chris?
Thank you, Chair Greenlick and Thompson. For the record, I'm Christine Chen Ryan, founder and president of Synergy Consulting, Inc. We provide technology, we're a technology small business firm providing customized software development for 23 years. I also serve as chair of the Oregon Small Business for Responsible Leadership, and I served as chair of the Governor's Small Business Council. In my written testimony, I have some statistics there that I like to put in because a lot of people don't really know the impact small business have on the Oregon economy, but I won't read it. Also, as a small business owner, I'm proud to say that we have always provided health insurance for employees. I pay 100% of medical and dental premiums, including vision, with low deductible, low out-of-pocket expense, and low co-pays. And I have also here some statistics for the past, I think, 10, 11 years of my insurance rate increases, so you can understand why I am here today. In its current form, the Oregon Health Insurance Exchange is not allowed to negotiate with insurance companies for the lowest premium rates and quality benefits. Only with the authority to negotiate with the exchange will the exchange be able to ensure that small business owners and their employees have better access to quality, affordable health care. The exchange should be accountable and transparent, and as the providers of the services for which the board will be negotiating, representatives of the insurance industry would have a clear conflict of interest and should be excluded from board membership. I also, small businesses today and can, no longer able to afford these benefits. I don't know how long I will be able to pay 100%. There's always a tipping point. And many more are facing the difficult decision, and I can't wait to get my increase for next year. I don't want to pass it on to my employees, and I don't want to reduce benefits, and I don't want to stop giving benefits. So small business start Oregon who wish to offer good wages, coupled with good benefits, are being literally priced out of the market by exponential increases in premiums for benefits, as I listed, and in turn become seriously compromised and eroded. Small businesses throughout Oregon need relief and deserve and demand a robust health insurance exchange to negotiate the best possible rate and benefits. I've also included a letter that the Small Business Majority and the Oregon Small Business for Responsible Leadership has sent to you all in April, expressing these same concerns. Now, I would like to be a little frank. We have been hearing throughout, the last few years with the economy, that's we need to help small businesses. Small businesses are hurting. I think it's time to help small businesses. We don't have the financial ability to be strong like other entities to lobby and put in our weight to make a bill stronger for small businesses. We depend on you as lawmakers to help us. We need your help. We need a strong bill. We cannot, for 10 years have these increases and still, be able to offer health care. So I'm asking for your help and begging for you to make this very strong for small businesses. Thank you.
Thank you, Christine. Holt?
Co-Chair Greenlick, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Tom Holt with Regents Blue Cross Blue Shield of Oregon, here in support of Senate Bill 99A, which we think presents a wonderful opportunity for the state to expand access to coverage through the subsidies that will be available to individuals and to small businesses through the exchanges. But I think just a quick point of context is really important for this bill. One, regardless of what did or might happen at the federal level, we would have this bill anyway, thanks to House Bill 2009 from last session, which directed coming forward with a plan for an exchange, and that's good. But the alternative to not having a bill is that the feds will write one for us, write a plan for us. And I think we have lots of lessons about how well things work out when Washington, D.C. makes plans for Oregon 3,000 miles west. I think we're much better off to have our own plan that works for Oregon. The bill as it stands has a number of compromises throughout it. Pick any of the major issues, and there's a significant compromise made, and I think the governance is a really good example of that. If we were starting from a blank slate, we'd probably say, well, the people on the board will be chosen by the governor, confirmed by the Senate, and we trust that the governor is going to look for good talent to oversee the exchange, and we don't need to worry about what hats people have or what constituencies they come from in a bill. What we have is a compromise where consumer members have at least two, and then there may be two members from the healthcare business community, and there's compromise. There's a conflict of interest is dealt with, so that if an individual on the board may have a conflict of interest, they declare it. If it's an actual conflict of interest particular to them or their organization, versus everyone else like them, then they can't participate. The other point I touch on is just in terms of this issue of active purchaser and negotiation. We don't think the exchange is the place for that. The cost drivers are what we need to get at, and we're doing that in the transformation project and a number of other bills that we're trying to support. But we don't like the trend of rates any more than anyone else does. We hate the fact that the cost drivers in healthcare are forcing us to ask for rates that are simply not sustainable. And with that, I'll close.
Thank you very much, Tom. Thank you, panel. Okay, we have Arthur Tower, Nick Salvi, Joe Zare, please. And following that, we have Laura Etherton, Bob Brown, Alvin Ma.
Bob Brown is on
the other side. Okay. I thought it'd be nice you today, right?
For the record, my name is Arthur Towers, Political Director for Service Employees Union Local 503. I really appreciate the opportunity to testify before your committee today. SEIU, I'm also here testifying on behalf of both SEIU Local 49, our hospital workers and janitorial workers, as well as Local 503. As I've mentioned to this committee before, our union represents 13,000 workers who don't receive employment-based health care, 6,000 child care providers, 3,500 adult foster care providers, and about 4,000 in-home care providers. And so the work of this committee on this bill will directly affect those members. Currently, we don't support Senate Bill 99A as it is, but we do think that the Dash 14 amendments are steps in the right direction. The Dash 14s allow the board to decide whether or not to negotiate for lower costs, and this is a good step forward. But we do urge that the bill direct the exchange to go deeper into negotiations for lower costs. What I wanted to focus on today, though, was the issue of governance. The board of the exchange should match the interests of consumers, but there should be a way to get the for the exchange to get the expertise that it needs to be able to do the business that's outlined here. And I look at my organization as an example. We have a democratically elected board of directors from among the rank and file of our membership. And so our board chair is a research analyst from the Board of Education, from the Department of Education. We have home care workers. We have social workers from DHS. We got guys from the road crew at ODOT. We got group life coordinators from the Youth Authority. And they govern the organization. They make the decisions for the organization. And then they hire expertise to assist them. They hire attorneys. They hire accountants. They hire lobbyists. And you can make your own decision about the quality of their choices, but nonetheless, they do bring in expertise, and I think that that's the sort of model that the exchange could use as well. And so, those were the two big reasons that we felt that Senate Bill 99A, as written, was lacking, and we do think that you're taking steps in the right direction. I'll conclude my remarks. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Todd. Say, if there's anybody else that wants to sign up that hasn't signed up, please let us know. I think we're going to be fine for time.
Committee members, thanks for the opportunity to testify. My name is Nick Sovey. I'm the executive director of Rose Community Development. Rose is a nonprofit organization that works to revitalize outer southeast Portland neighborhoods. We're ably represented by Representative Cannon. We build affordable housing, support families through early childhood education, and create neighborhood improvements like parks. Although our mission is not about making profits, Rose operates like any other small business. In the last, we have 9 employees, and next year will be our 20th anniversary, which means that we've been in business longer than most. Healthcare costs are out of control, and that's one of the biggest problems facing our small business. In the last 5 years, our costs increased by 94%. Our current plan is not as good as the one we had in 2006. We've increased copays and deductibles considerably. Even so, our healthcare bill almost doubled in 5 years. The healthcare exchange should use its leverage, the buying power of hundreds of thousands of consumers, to get the best deal that we can. I'm also concerned the proposed legislation allows exchange board members with a direct conflict of interest, competing private insurance company representatives. I hope the legislature will create a strong exchange that will reduce costs for Oregon's small businesses. The best way to do that is to encourage competition among insurers and create an independent exchange board that doesn't have conflicts of interest. Thanks very much for your work on behalf of Oregonians.
Yeah. Are you related to the Sylvia Island?
No, I wish I was.
Thank you. I've heard in several testimonies, so I'll ask you, since you just kind of reiterated what I'm hearing other people say about the notion of an exchange being able to negotiate better price because your health care costs are going up, and I understand I'm a small business owner. Do you have a sense of why you feel health care costs are going up? I mean, I keep hearing this over and over again. I've heard it. I mean, we've had, like, very long, lengthy meetings with all manner of people in my office around this, and I hear this refrain over and over again, healthcare costs are going up, but nobody actually gives me their sense of why they think healthcare costs are going up, and I'm just curious, you know, what your perception is about what's driving that.
Well, I've got an economics degree, so I'll do my best. But, I mean, I think it's true that people don't see the prices they're paying because it's a third-party system. But I also feel like healthcare is not a typical business because everybody is going to buy as much as they can. We all want to leave or we all want to live and we all want to stay healthy. And I think in a way it's like a public utility, like
electricity or water. That would be great.
Well,
maybe four. Excuse me. I'm sorry.
But does that make sense that, you know, it doesn't, it's like a public utility in that everybody needs it, and it needs to be something that has some controls for the consumer's benefit.
But that doesn't, I guess, really get to why you think what the drivers are that are driving your premiums up every year. I mean, that's the part I guess I'm kind of trying to struggle with. When people come to me and say, my healthcare premiums are going up, and the immediate, and I understand I'm not advocating one way or the other for, mm-hmm. you know, an insurance company or anything else like that. I want to get a sense, as people talk to me about this, the rhetoric of my costs are going up, my costs are going up, and I don't disagree they're going up, but I'm trying to get a sense of if people really understand what those cost drivers are.
Mm-hmm.
The immediate assumption is that it's profit in the pockets of an insurance company or a greedy doctor or something like that. I think there's other cost drivers, but yet everyone comes to me and says this, and nobody's really articulating when I have these meetings or when I listen on the dais what they think those costs really are and why they're driving up.
I think from the healthcare provider side, and there have been some really good articles about this in the New Yorker and other places, that when the doctor is in a fee-for-service business, the more they provide to people, the more they get paid. And I think the incentives from the provider side have to be more, that they have incentives for people getting better results as opposed to people buying more services.
I'm sorry, Parrish, that would really be a good topic for an informational hearing. And why don't we schedule either in the interim or toward the end of the session and talk about different people's view of the drivers because there is information about that.
Sure, but I think it also relates to this conversation, though, as well, because I think there is an expectation that an exchange will drive down the costs. And, you know, I don't know that it will if we don't address cost drivers as well, and that
the underlying cost.
Because if we're trying to control a price, but this body's also not going to do anything to control costs, we can't. That model doesn't actually work from an economics perspective. You can't say fix a price here, but let costs to go with it skyrocket, and we've not done anything yet to address potential of skyrocketing costs.
Well, for example, the essential benefit level. One of the theories behind that is that you put more copays on things that aren't proven and less co-pays on things that are proven. And you arrange the way to shift the emphasis from the emergency room in the hospital back down into primary care, which we're talking about in the transformation process. I mean, I think there are things. I think it would be a very interesting topic to put some time into.
Absolutely.
But you're right. It's the underlying cost of healthcare is the major factor.
But the testimony we are hearing today even speaks to that notion that, and that's my concern, that speaks to this will fix the costs. And I'm not convinced that right yet that this will actually address those costs. This is a mechanism of that, but we're not doing that piece. And I really am concerned in the calls and the emails that I'm taking that the public perception is an exchange will lower costs. And I want to just try to be really clear that even if you have better negotiating power, that might be true. I get a better deal at the grocery store if I buy 10 for 10, but that doesn't change the underlying cost that the cost, if I'm buying 10 for 10 on a loaf of bread and the wheat prices are going up, that I might not be able to get that buying power at the store anymore. They can't get the buying power that they need. So, yes, you might get a better rate, but it's not solving that.
But there are drivers both on the insurance side and on the underlying healthcare side. For example, if you're buying an individual policy, as opposed to being in a risk pool of a million people, the risk that comes of being a small group
increases the premium cost. So, for example, small groups that buy individually pay higher premiums than the same small groups when they're in a pool.
I understand that.
So there is there are some insurance phenomena, though. But I think this is really something that's important for us to examine. It would be really useful to do so.
It would be interesting to back this thing all the way down to the doctor's office and look at what are the cost drivers in providing the medical care in a doctor's office. How much do their supplies go up? How much does labor go up? I mean, somebody's writing out a bill that's driving health care costs, and that's got to be the cumulative effect of what they're having to provide. And I don't know where you intersect this thing, but I'm suspecting, if I hear you, we're way high. We're up in the paying for it end of things, not down here in the field where it's what's driving the cost in the first place. Is the bill $20 or $18? What's the difference?
I'm just concerned that the testimony we're hearing, because we've heard it now several times,
right.
You know, drive down costs, and I'm getting it in emails, and I'm seeing it in op-eds that this is going to drive down costs, and I think there's a messaging problem that's happening out there that this is the end-all, be-all to drive down costs, and it may or may not be, but I also think there's a whole lot of other things, and even if you get those million people in your exchange, if the cost of, you know, dental floss goes up for the dentist and they're supplying it to every person who comes through, then those million people are still going to get a lift in their rates at some point down the road. That's my concern.
I don't think anybody thinks this is the end-all, be-all. I think people think it's a piece of it, and the transformation, we're hoping, is another piece, but this is a huge one. Arthur, I sent you wanting to...
Co-Chair Greenlick, Representative Parrish, I think that... in our PEB purchasing, what we've seen is we have a relatively large group. We have taken a lot of steps to improve the quality of care, go with the value-based medicine, do the preventive medicine, and yet our rate increases continue to rise. And so I think that your last comment was right on target, that we've got to tackle it via the work on the transformation committee on the delivery system. This is a chunk of it. It may not be the hugest chunk, it may not be the smallest chunk, but the work that you're achieving or striving for here, I think, is part of the puzzle, but not all of it.
And the PEB increases were a lot smaller than the small group increases right now that you're facing, for example.
Yes, sir.
Yes, Representative.
Yeah, I don't want to just repeat what everyone's saying, so I'll keep it shorter than I planned, but we have to address this issue on many, many different levels. We talked about, I mean, we passed a bill on the floor of the House just yesterday on medical liability, making sure that doctors weren't penalized for talking to patients about when they made a mistake. And, you know, we need to look at fee for service. We need to look at consumers' responsibility in keeping themselves healthy and encourage that type of behavior, encouraging preventative care. We need to look at palliative care / death panels, whatever you want to call it. I mean, at the end of the day, we need to look at how we're spending money at the end of life that's going to help people be as comfortable as possible and live as long as possible and balance those needs. But this is one thing, I mean, coming from a small business background, I can tell you that purchasing insurance in a small business, as you know, is really difficult. It is very expensive, and I think this is part of the solution. And what I get concerned about is that we let the perfect be the enemy of the good, and if we move the ball up the field on, you know, just a little bit in a number of fronts, then I think that we can address this. But there's no one silver bullet. There is no one solution. But I feel really good between this and then the work that's happening on the transformation team that we're taking a better crack at it than certainly any other state.
Mr. Zare?
Do we get 3 minutes still?
You got 3 minutes.
So we used your 3 minutes already.
Yeah, we used your time.
I used your 3 minutes. I'm sorry.
Co-chairs Greenlick and Thompson and members of the Healthcare Committee. My name is Joe Zarr. I represent We Can Do Better, previously known as the Archimedes Movement. We have followed the development of Senate Bill 99 since it was in the beginning of the Health Fund Board, and we have offered suggestions from time to time during that process. We appear before you again today because we want to help the legislature produce a health insurance exchange that can best serve the needs of all Oregonians. Written testimony is being distributed to you that identifies five issues which we believe need attention, but I will discuss here only our most serious concern because of time constraints. As Senate Bill 99 now reads, Section 4, Part 5 allows for two of the members on the Insurance Exchange Board of Directors to have a conflict of interest. It seems like an inherently bad idea and a poor business practice to place on a governing board of any corporation a member who is likely to have a conflict of interest. This kind of problem may not be so serious for boards in private industry, but in government organizations, even the appearance of a conflict of interest can have undesirable consequences in terms of public confidence and trust. This consideration is especially important with the Insurance Exchange because the Board of Directors will be making decisions which affect a lot of people. Every effort should be made to recruit board members who do not have a conflict of interest. One solution might be to use technical advisory committees as a source of expertise instead of a board member who has a conflict of interest. If that is not possible, as a last resort, a board member having a conflict of interest could be allowed and to participate as an advisory capacity and in discussions, but should not serve as a chair or vice chair or be allowed to vote on matters related to their conflict of interest. He or she could also be used effectively as direct liaison between the board and a technical advisory committee. Thank you for your time and attention.
Could I just read for the record what that section actually says? That was section, says that no more than two of the members who are not ex officio may be individuals who are employed by consultants to or members of a board of directors of an insurer, third party administrator, an insurance producer, a health care provider, or health care facility or clinic, or, members of a trade association, insurers of third-party administrators. I mean, there's a whole set of things. It doesn't say that they can be there with a direct conflict of interest, as you stated it. So, I mean, you may be interpreting this to say that, but it's not what it says specifically. Okay. Yes, Professor Thompson.
One of the problems we get into with this, because this has come up in some other proceedings I've been involved with, is walking the fine line between how you get people who have the knowledge you need and the sophistication to manage a board operation, but yet don't know or aren't involved in some things. An attorney once told me the perfect juror is someone who doesn't know anything, because then they have no life experiences. They're going to taint their decision making. But unfortunately, that person doesn't exist, so we take what we can get. And it's kind of, if we got people on a board that really have no contact with healthcare, so they have no conflict of interest, number one. Number two, they probably also have no interest, but you've just got a real tough situation, because then you end up, those people are backed up by and I've seen this happen, by a bunch of paid advisors that are telling them what it is they should have known and or might have known. So the conflict of interest shifts down to the paid advisors, and it's still somebody who's involved in the process that has knowledge that might be in conflict. I don't know how you resolve these issues other than integrity. And yeah. I would hope that in limiting this to two members,
No more than two members,
if any. If any two members on a board can really control the board, your problem isn't with the members, it's with the board, number one. And number two, the governor has to select people to fill this board who meet qualifications and also can be confirmed by the Senate. So there's a certain winnowing there that You know, you pick the wrong people, the Senate's going to look at the list and go, we don't like any of these people. They're out of here. And the governor has a problem. The Senate has a problem. So there's process in here, I think, that probably protects. I understand what you're saying, but I think we're probably better protected by the process than we think we are. I wish I felt we were that well protected on conflict of interest in the legislature, but that's not the case. You know, I mean, people who come here with various kinds of experience that I don't like, I would prefer to have them thrown out. I haven't been able to do that. I mean, teachers vote on education bills and doctors vote on medical bills, and I think we manage the conflict of interest with integrity in most cases and transparency. And those are more important to me than whether or not this person's employed by an insurance company. But I understand what you're saying. It's just, I'm not sure we can get there in a direct path that the kind of sterility that we think we want is even available. I'm not sure what I just said.
No, not bad for a Friday afternoon.
Representative
Hoyle?
To follow up on...
Let's get the next panel working up, and then let me go on. Laura Etherton, Bob Brown, and Alvin Ma.
Okay. To follow up on what my illustrious co-chairs have said, I think it's important that we look at the ex officio members that could potentially have a conflict of interest, that it is may, not shall, that there can be no more than two, and again, we have a fairly thorough appointment process, and that, on the other hand, that at least two members shall be consumer members. So not only do we have, and again, this is a compromise bill that came through, but we have the potential, and no more than, but it's may not shall, so there could be zero, there could be up to two, but no more than that. And again, there are two absolute places for consumer members, and for me, that made me feel a lot better. But I think, again, looking at the language of this bill and how we got there is important.
Thank you. The last panel will be Elena Guini, Stacy Michelson, and Rick Bennett. Let's go.
You ready?
Yep.
Hi. My name is Bob Brown, and I'm the chair of the Oregon Health Action Campaign. And I am a leader in the Metropolitan Alliance for Common Good, where we have been representing about 21 Metropolitan Alliance faith, labor, and community-based member institutions in the struggle for affordable, appropriate, accessible health care. Previously, and I think this is important, I worked for Intel for 23 years as a member of a software quality organization, and I know firsthand how big corporations fight for the best options for health care for their employees. We had some very good options for insurance at an affordable price. However, after I have left Intel, I have mediocre coverage that is very expensive. I'm talking to you today as a representative of the SAFE campaign. So John and other people have talked about the SAFE 2011 campaign. The SAFE campaign includes over 20 organizations representing consumers, faith organizations, small businesses, seniors, unions, children's advocates, nurses, and other providers, and others. We came together during the legislative session to advocate on key shared priorities. This year, our priorities include advocating for a strong competitive insurance marketplace. While the members of the SAFE campaign very much support establishing an Oregon exchange, we cannot support Senate Bill 99 as it's currently written. We urge the committee to amend the bill to do several things, and I assume you know where I'm going here. So we would like you
to... Now you need to go there quickly.
to direct the Exchange Board to leverage buying power of the exchange enrollees to get the best deal for people purchasing insurance. Right now the bill does not... the bill doesn't direct the exchange to do this, but in fact it prohibits the Exchange Board from going out for bids and taking only the best plans. The Exchange Board should be able to do selective contracting just like large businesses do. My experience at Intel has led me to believe that if you have a large group of people, you can do a better job for the group of people that you're working with. The second thing that we would like to bring up is that it has to do with the exchange is accountable. Make sure that the exchange is accountable to consumers and small businesses. The conflict, there's been a lot of discussion here about the conflict of interest issue, and for me, the bottom line is that anybody who sits on the exchange board should not be able to get a financial benefit from decisions that they make in any way. So I understand
that. Like consumers being able to arrange for cheaper health insurance?
I think that's a good idea.
That's a conflict, isn't it? You said they shouldn't be able to benefit directly.
But the exchange is there for the benefit of the consumers.
But I thought you said people on the board shouldn't be entitled to benefit financially in any way.
People on the board from a business perspective.
Oh, okay.
Chair Greenlick, you just made Dr. Buckstein smile.
I was just saying.
I missed that. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Mr. Buckstein.
Yes, Mr. Buckstein.
Master Buckstein.
Yes.
So in my written testimony, I have a lot more things to say, but I'm going to wrap it up right now. In the testimony that I provided you, there's some other information about the SAFE campaign and about our positions with respect to the exchange and the General SAFE Coalition. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
One of the things Mr. Buckstein would have said, I think, in response, this is one of the things that Intel has an advantage is that they're not covered by the regulation since they're self-insured and can do things in a way without.
That's right.
You want to shake your head,
that's
Steve.
Right.
I could hear that coming, right? Laura.
Hello. Co-chairs Greenlick and Thompson, members of the committee. My name is Laura Etherton. I'm a healthcare advocate with OSPIRG. Oregon State Public Interest Research Group. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today on Senate Bill 99. We appreciate the opportunity to address some of the concerns that we have with the bill. A little bit of background. OSPIRG is a nonprofit, nonpartisan consumer organization, and our healthcare program really comes out of our consumer program, looking both at costs and quality and the health of Oregonians across the state. We've been working on the issue of healthcare costs and specifically the exchange for about 4 or 5 years now and are very excited about the idea of an exchange in Oregon and the potential for the exchange to help reduce costs, improve quality, and improve the health of folks and be part of a broad solution to the problems we're seeing in healthcare, not a silver bullet. As Representative Hoyle pointed out, it's going to take a broad approach, but the health insurance exchange can be one very powerful approach, not only to provide consumers and businesses with a smart purchaser on their behalf to negotiate a better deal, but also to help encourage better standards so that we can drive down the underlying cost of care as well. I just want to highlight two concerns with the bill that are startlingly similar to the problems that a lot of consumers and businesses have identified with the bill and have repeated today, so I'll make it quick. We're concerned that as currently written, Senate Bill 99 prohibits the exchange from doing selective contracting, and just a little bit of context here. I mean, again, consumers, businesses facing skyrocketing costs from a number of different solutions, but right now in the market, an individual consumer in the individual market or a small business really has no market leverage. We have no ability to have a counteroffer, as it were, that's going to be taken seriously in the market. We have no ability to go out for, as a small business, you have no ability to go out for bids to multiple insurance companies and take a variety of them to get the best deal. The exchange would allow consumers and businesses both to have greater choices and more leverage in the market. And it's one of the reasons we're excited to not only have a regulatory approach in healthcare, that's a separate thing, but this is a really unique market-based purchasing solution approach we're excited about. And we're strongly supporting an amendment. We would encourage you to draft an amendment to direct the exchange to negotiate for lower costs and use selective contracting to help small businesses and consumers, and to make sure that the exchange is accountable to consumers and businesses, free from conflicts of interest, and fully transparent as well. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Nicely done.
Yes, ma'am.
Nicely done. She landed on the 3 minutes.
Right on the 3 minutes. You did great. Mr. Ma?
Great. Co-chairs and members of the committee, my name is Alvin Ma. I'm here as a representative of the People of Color Health Equity Collaborative, or POCHEC, and I just want to say thank you for our opportunity to share our thoughts on Senate Bill 99. Just as a quick point of reference, POCHEC is a statewide network of 20 community-based organizations of color, immigrants, and refugees whose vision is an Oregon where all residents have equal health outcomes regardless of color, race, ethnicity, gender, class, sexual orientation, or immigration status. The focus of the collaborative is to educate the community about social determinants of health and to fight to eliminate disparities in education, employment, income, housing, environment, and transportation. We believe the Health Insurance Exchange Board needs to start with equity by engaging communities of color, immigrants, and refugees, both early and often, to ensure that there is a focus to address health disparities within the healthcare system. There's a need to ensure that the insurance exchange has a scope and vision reflected in Oregon Health Policy Board's Action Plan for Health, and especially ensure that consumer voices are adequately represented within the governance structure of the exchange. It is critical that this exchange be responsive to the interests of all Oregonians, and especially consumers and small business owners. We are concerned by the board composition as currently defined in Senate Bill 99, and believe that the exchange purchasing board should be free from conflicts of interests. Healthcare premiums and out-of-pocket costs are too high. Families and small businesses keep facing 20% rate increases year after year, and communities of color are disproportionately impacted. Small employers and individuals don't have the market leverage on their own to negotiate with big insurance companies. We need the exchange to leverage the buying power of all its enrollees to negotiate a better deal, just like large businesses do now. We urge you to amend Senate Bill 99 so that it is something that meets the needs of Oregonians by eliminating board positions with conflict of interests, allowing the exchange to negotiate for lower costs for Oregonians, and ensure that there is a focus to address health disparities. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you, panel. Let's have our last panel now. Helena Guiney, Stacey Michelson, and last, but definitely not least, Rick Benn. You're the closer, Rick. That's an important position.
Chair Thompson and Greenlich, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Stacey Michelson, Policy Associate with Children First for Oregon. I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to testify on Senate Bill 99 today, and as many of my colleagues have done, provide a little bit of background on my organization. Children First is a nonprofit advocating working to make Oregon a place where all children are healthy and safe, and where families have the resources they need to thrive. We've been a champion of many policies regarding children's health care, and I'm here today to encourage you, as many others have done, to look at further amendments to Senate Bill 99. Children First has been proud to work closely on a lot of health care in our state, and like many other Oregonians, we take great pride in the fact that Oregon is a national leader in health care. Very excited that Oregon is the first state in the nation to cut the rate of uninsured children in half in a year, which has just been announced, from 12% to 6%. And we're also very excited to see Oregon as a national leader in the development of a health exchange. But we do want to make sure that in taking this opportunity to create an exchange ahead of the federal deadline and to do things the Oregon way, that we're being thoughtful and actually doing things the right way as well. We believe that part of the aim of the exchange needs to be negotiating down costs for businesses and Oregonians. As you know, that Children First has worked heavily on children's health care policy, but the big picture is that we ultimately need healthy families, and that means that parents and those families need to have health care as well. And currently, far too few parents in Oregon have access to affordable health care. So we are looking for an exchange that will allow individuals and businesses to negotiate down costs so that individuals, parents, small business owners have affordable health coverage for themselves, for their employees, for their families. In short, we need an exchange that protects the best interests of Oregonians, and it is for that reason that we have concerns with the two positions on the board that allow what we perceive as a potential conflict of interest. We absolutely agree that there needs to be expertise from the healthcare industry on the board, but we think there are ways to do that without having folks who are currently employed by businesses that would stand to benefit directly by decisions made by the exchange. So I would encourage you to look at amendments that would remove anyone from serving on the board who has a direct conflict of interest. We would be happy to talk about possible ways of pursuing those options. But in short, we're very excited to see the development of the exchange with these two possible amendments, and we look forward to continuing down the process, creating an exchange that ultimately leads to healthier families, which we believe will lead to healthier children in Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Co-chairs Greenlick and Thompson, members of the committee, my name is Ilana Guinea with the Oregon AFL-CIO, representing 225,000 middle-class and working Oregonians. A lot of what I wanted to say has already been said. I don't want to be too repetitive, but risking that, you know, the majority of our members have good health care, but more and more they're either giving up pieces of that health care or leaving the negotiating table with less pay to take home every time they go to bargaining. And for our members and the other working Oregonians who don't have health care through the workplace, more and more of them are dropping the coverage that they've managed to buy on their own every year because of skyrocketing costs. Health care reform for us is an economic issue. It's about our businesses in Oregon not being able to compete because of the amount of money they're putting into healthcare, or not being able to attract the best workers because they don't offer healthcare. It's about workers who don't get a decent wage because they're trying to put money into healthcare, or who can't go to work because they have health problems they're trying to deal with outside of the workplace. And because of that, we look for financial and economic solutions to the healthcare problems we have. To hit on the two topics that I know you've heard a lot about today already, negotiating costs. Right now, consumers don't have any ability to have a say in what they're going to pay for health care insurance. You have to have insurance to have decent care. So either you go without or you pay whatever you have to get a plan that will cover what you need. You're stuck with whatever is out there. And if we create an exchange and don't give that exchange the ability to do something about that and to really help keep costs down and do a little bit of negotiating, we're cutting our workers in Oregon, we're cutting them off from the possibilities that they could have. I think that the Dash 14 amendment is a step in the right direction for improving Senate Bill 99. I don't think that it goes far enough. We need to tell the exchange that that's what they should be doing, not just leave the possibility open. Otherwise, depending on the makeup of the board and the offers that come in and how much other work is out there while we create a plan, it may not happen. And if we think it's important enough that we should allow it to happen, it should be important enough that we say it needs to happen. In terms of the conflict of interest, really, the exchange board is going to need to improve the exchange that they put together as we learn what works and what doesn't. They'll come back to you with a business plan, but that plan, I assume, will change over time. And as the board looks at what reform could be, it would be a shame if the bottom line, personally, of some members of that board comes into conflict with the reform that we need, and that affects their decision-making. I understand that we need to have expertise. I think there's a lot of ways to get that expertise. I understand that many boards have people on them who have a conflict of interest. But when we're talking about a person's bottom line conflicting with the reform that Oregonians need, we have a real problem at hand. I heard the beep, so I will leave it at that. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I can't even hear it sitting here. Yes, sir, Rick.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, Rick Bennett, Director of Government Relations for AARP Oregon. I've provided you with written testimony related to SB 99. It's analysis that our national policy staff has done. It speaks primarily to the issues that others have spoken to, the ability of the board to negotiate or at least be selective in the plans that participate in the exchange, as well as the issue surrounding conflict of interest. And in fact, this analysis is actually done on the Dash 3 amendments in the Senate, and all I really had to do is just change the co-chairs on the for the memo and so forth, because in fact, very little has changed in the bill since that time. Mr. Holt mentioned there's been many compromises in this bill. I'm not sure who he's been compromising or negotiating with, but I think most consumers and consumer advocates and small business owners would certainly say that they have not been at the table in those negotiations and in that compromise. I find myself time and again feeling a state of mind, and the word I've used is dumbfounded. I'm dumbfounded that I have to advocate so strenuously on these issues and not seem to gain any ground at all on them. Dumbfounded. Actually, I'm dumbfounded that I'm actually here at 4:45 in the afternoon on a Friday afternoon as well. But I hope that underscores the importance that AARP is placing on this legislation. And in fact, as you well know, AARP has been very active in the discussions over the last several years, both here in Oregon on health care reform, as well at the national level. And certainly we have advocated strongly for an insurance exchange. We recognize that that does not solve all of our problems, but it is definitely a piece of the puzzle in trying to create a different delivery system, to kind of bend the curve on the cost associated with that system, and for the exchange to provide a more level playing field, if nothing else, for working families here in Oregon and small business owners. And it has been very unfortunate, as far as I'm concerned, that AARP and many advocacy organizations for consumers have had to take a position of being opposed to this bill on the Senate side. And we certainly look to you to give greater consideration to our concerns as you work on this bill and move it forward. I will say the -14 amendments certainly are an improvement, if left nothing else. At this point, it does not handcuff the board. It does not say certain tools that you might use in achieving your mission are off the table, and at least allows the board to be created and to give some consideration to just what tools they do need to provide affordable health care coverage to Oregonians and small business owners here.
It's your last. You can talk as long as you want.
I think that covers it. Although, if one of the two co-chairs here could say dumbfounded, it would allow me to double the bet that I have going right now.
I don't know how to use dumbfounded in this sense.
That's good enough, Mr. Chair. Thank you very much,
Rick. I do want to remind people that we think of AARP as being interested in Medicare, and of course, AARP is interested in Medicare, but large numbers of your members will be very much likely to be very much affected by this exchange.
Mr. Chairman, I appreciate your comments, and indeed, when I first testified over in the Senate, I made the point that approximately 50% of our members here in Oregon are between the ages of 50 and 64, and this is very much of interest to them. Thank you.
Also be very interested to know that some of us are very concerned about what happens to older people, just in case.
Yeah, I expect to be, when I get old enough, to be a member.
Yeah, right.
Right.
Thank you.
I am surprised we have not only a solo violin here, but we have a chamber orchestra. So
yeah.
People say they're interested. Committee members, thank you also very much for your participation. Close the public hearing on Senate Bill 99, and we are adjourned until 3 o'clock Monday.